these and other critical issues, be sure to visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. And that brings us to the end of today's program. Join us again next time for another edition of That Was the Week That Was. Take care and goodbye.
Waking up for Fajr, gotta make wudu, gotta pray my sunnah. Got me ghusl, gotta clip my nails. Looking outside, the sun is rising. Up in the sky, everybody's rushing. Gotta get down to the masjid. Gotta say salam to the imam. Sitting in the first saf, chilling in the back saf. Gotta make my mind up, do what the Prophet did. It's Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make dhikr on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy, mercy. Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make dhikr on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to the ajr. Miswakim, miswakim.
Yeah!
Miswakim, miswakim.
Whoa!
Pray, 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 pray. Gotta read Surah Dikah. 12:45, the imam's on the minbar. Talking about something like fiqh as a cat. They're whispering, chatting from the crowd. Don't they know that it's haram? I stand up, you stand up. Praise about to start by the qamat yusalah. Foot to foot, shoulder to shoulder. Just don't step on me. Sitting in the first saf, chilling in the back saf. Gotta make my mind up, do what the Prophet did. It's Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make thinking on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy, mercy. Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make dhikr on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to the ajr. Miswakin, miswakin.
Yeah!
Miswakin, miswakin.
Whoa!
Pray, 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 pray. Gotta read Surah Dikah. It's Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make dhikr on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy, mercy. Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make dhikr on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy.
Good morning to all listeners from around the world. You're tuning to Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. I'm your host for the next hour. Inventions that emerge from the Islamic world include the discovery of Critic Acid, Jaber ibn Hayyan, architecture, the minaret, the bridge mill, the vertical axle windmill, teaching hospitals, marching bands, early torpedoes, the guitar, the lute, the water pipe, also known as hookah, early attempts at gliding, algebra, the pinhole camera, the laws of refraction of light in optic, coffee, and more. Muslim scholar Ibn Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. You are listening to the continuation of Iran Radio. We start off this hour's programs with Round the World with reporters. Reporters from around the world tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. Listen to fascinating reports from countries both near and afar. After that, we have For a Better Life. The program teaches excellent practical ethics and morals which we can use in our lives from the point of view of Islam. Our varied radio productions feature will be our final program this hour. Stay with us for the next hour.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Across the crowded western areas of Khan Yunis, tents stretch as fragile shelters held up by one essential material, wood. Yet even the simplest material is denied to Gaza's displaced families. Wooden pallets, once lying discarded on the roadside, have become a treasure for anyone desperate to keep a tent standing against wind and rain. That's what Rami Ibrahim understood. With his worn-out saw and a rusty hammer, he set up a small makeshift workshop, salvaging every splinter he could collect. From sunrise to sunset, Rami and his children worked together, cracking boards apart, pounding nails, and joining short pieces into long, sturdy supports, repurposing scraps into the pillars that can hold fragile shelters standing.
Most of us now live in tents, as no caravans or suitable housing units have arrived. While many people break down these pallets for firewood, I try to collect them from those who fetch them after aid or commercial deliveries. My children and I carefully transform these scraps into something usable. I even built my own workshop structure from this wood. As the weather grows harsher, at least when people lose their tents, they can find an affordable alternative.
Here in Gaza, wood has become a rare commodity, not for furniture, but for survival. With materials blocked by Israel, the scraps of wood recycled here are the only option for many displaced families to hold their tents from collapsing.
For the displaced families, the fear is no longer limited to Israel's bombs. Even the weather can tear their tents down. On a nearby road, Abu Ihab has just got a few wooden boards from the workshop. He lays them to rebuild a new tent after his previous shelter collapsed under the brutal conditions. With only a handful of boards, he hopes this rebuilt structure will withstand the winds this time, offering his family even a fragile sense of stability.
This isn't the first time I've used these wooden boards. They cracked during the last storm and caused my tent to collapse. Now, I got them again from a nearby workshop. But we really need stronger wood and tarps. What would truly help are proper housing units. Yet, they still haven't arrived, leaving us trapped in this endless cycle.
For Abu Ihab and countless others, the meaning of refuge has long been lost in the ruins of the homes Israel destroyed. No matter how many times they rebuild or reinforce their tents, the struggle remains the same. Families continue searching for materials or any form of proper shelter, but what they truly need remains out of reach as long as Israel blocks the entry of essential construction supplies. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis, Palestine.
Pakistan's capital Islamabad marked the International Day of Commemoration and Dignity of the Victims of the Crime of Genocide and of the Prevention of this Crime. A seminar was held bringing together former diplomats, members of parliament, think tank researchers, university faculty members, and students. Speakers reflected on historic and ongoing genocides targeting Muslim communities, saying Gaza today represents the world's gravest moral failure.
9th December, and by the United Nations, it's declared as the Genocide Prevention Day, and especially to pay respect to the victims of different genocides. I must appreciate all the people in South Africa and all the other different countries, have showed their courage to support this issue and to support the people of Palestine, and especially the students of different Western universities. They supported this issue more.
Participants described the situation in Gaza as catastrophic, urging Muslim countries to stand united to defend the rights of the Palestinian people. They said nations like Iran, which have shown firm diplomatic resolve and a strong stance against Israeli oppression, can send a powerful message to the world.
I think it requires the realization and united action by the entire Muslim community around the world. It is not only some people who raise their voices and it is then forgotten. Well, Iran has taken a stand which is a beacon of light for all of us.
Meanwhile, a Muslim unity conference was also held on the outskirts of Pakistan's capital, Islamabad. Participants from diverse backgrounds rejected U.S. President Donald Trump's plan to end the war in Gaza, calling it a complete fraud.
The so-called peace promise made under Trump's leadership is nothing but a fraud. There is no ceasefire, the massacres continue, the genocide continues. Even the areas Israel was supposed to withdraw from remain under siege, and aid is still not reaching the people.
The participants emphasized that Gaza has become a defining test for the Islamic world, urging Muslim nations to take a united stand against occupation, injustice, and genocide of Israel.
Public anger keeps growing across Pakistan as the Israeli genocide in Gaza continues unabated amid international silence. Many fear that without global action, the catastrophic humanitarian crisis will intensify. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
The annual International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people was observed at the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa compound in Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa. A ceremony was held on Tuesday, bringing together representatives from the UN, the African Union, and ambassadors from various countries. The event highlighted decades of suffering faced by the Palestinian people, both in Gaza and the West Bank.
The Palestinian people's suffering has intensified under decades of a belligerent Israeli occupation, which has relentlessly targeted our land, the people, and every aspect of life in Palestine, culminating in an atrocious genocide in the Gaza Strip, confirmed by numerous UN and international human rights reports.
Injustice also continues in the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem, with Israel military operations, settlers, violence, settlement expansions, evictions, demolitions, and threats of annexations. At the same time, hundreds of humanitarian workers have been killed. The majority were Palestinians, UN staff, marking the largest loss of personnel in the organization's history. More journalists have perished than in any other conflict since the Second World War.
Participants expressed support for the Palestinians' legitimate rights, including the right to have independent states.
The Middle East region will not be able to emerge from the successive crises unless the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people to establish his own independent state are recognized.
Despite the UN's annual International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people and global calls to address the ongoing crisis, Palestinians continue to face a grave ordeal in the history of humanity. And this event in Addis Ababa urges the international community to move beyond rhetoric and support the legitimate resistance of the Palestinian people in their quest for self-determination.
As we reflect on the hardship endured by millions of Palestinians, we are reminded that solidarity is not merely symbolic. It is a moral imperative. It is a wake-up call to the international community to redouble its commitment.
The event concluded with the 40 exhibition featuring the tragedies occurring in Gaza, honoring ambassadors whose countries have recognized the state of Palestine, and the flag-raising ceremony. Amanil Gabramatin, Addis Ababa.
Officials from the three branches of government, along with leading experts, came together for the National Summit on Enhancing Transparency in Tehran. The event also marked International Anti-Corruption Day.
Transparency and administrative integrity
lie at the heart of Islamic governance, which brings the officials of the Islamic Republic together.
Good governance depends on greater transparency and the elimination of conflict of interest situations. This gathering aimed to promote these principles and increase public understanding of the country's governing bodies and their performance.
The outcome of the scientific and expert discussions in this program must indeed be actionable recommendations that contribute to a culture of transparency, which is rooted in our Islamic-Iranian heritage. There is a direct correlation between transparency and conflict of interest, such that greater transparency will allow for easier identification of potential conflict of interest situations. The decisions made by officials across all sectors of governance must be made accessible to the public.
The meeting also focused on discussing policymaking, inspection, technical analysis, and the evaluation of anti-corruption measures, as well as mechanisms to oversee the implementation of the law.
Our country's judicial system, in its capacity as supervisor, will monitor the implementation of transparency initiatives. And at the Ministry of Agriculture, we have taken the lead on this issue by signing the relevant agreement.
Our primary objective is to ensure the seamless delivery of services, supported by administrative integrity and reduced operational costs, while maximizing transparency through the simplification of bureaucratic procedures.
According to Iran's General Inspection Office, the ultimate goal of this meeting is to establish a sustainable system for assessing administrative integrity and issuing administrative integrity report cards so that transparency and accountability become an integral part of the country's managerial culture. Mohin Amini, Tehran.
South Korea will increase its military spending by 7.5%, the most in 7 years. Although a culture of militarism pervades South Korea's society, many believe that money could be better spent.
I think 7.5% is a huge amount. I think it could be used for foreign aid for developing countries or other causes more beneficial than our military or the U.S. military.
Seoul's jump in defense spending comes at the insistence of U.S. President Donald Trump, who's alternated between threatening to withdraw U.S. forces and demanding ever larger sums for their deployment here.
South Koreans' confidence in the U.S. as an economic partner suffered with the expulsion of the country's high-tech workers from factory construction in the U.S. state of Georgia earlier this year. Trump's shift in the U.S. alliance commitment is compounding that unease.
In its national security strategy released this week, Washington neglected to even mention North Korea, South Korea's primary concern, instead highlighting the threat it sees from China. And the U.S. has also been pressuring South Korea to join its Beijing containment strategy, an unpopular policy in Seoul.
The U.S. might try to use South Korea to defend against China, but I think that's a dangerous idea, and I hope we don't get involved.
South Korean civic leader Lee Hong-jong warns of the dangers of getting involved in U.S. conflicts and contributing to the regional arms race.
If we continue to purchase U.S. strategic weapons, often in the name of national defense, and align ourselves with U.S. deterrence against China, it'll be extremely difficult to break free from this dependent defense system. Ultimately, boosting military spending will only exacerbate the threat of war and push the security crisis on the Korean Peninsula to the brink once again.
Instead, many activists here want South Korea to exercise greater independence, reduce military spending, and rekindle genuine dialogue with North Korea. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The human cost of the war in Gaza is etched not only in the lives lost, in thousands living with irreversible physical trauma. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, 6,000 people have undergone amputations since the start of Israel's genocidal war, an explosion of suffering that has reshaped entire families and communities.
Before the war, there were around 1,500 cases, resulting also from Israeli attacks. Now, after the war, the number increased to be over 7,500. This is an indication of their continuous suffering. The prosthetics are not available, and the lack of rehabilitation make the task of this center more challenging.
The ministry reports that children make up one in every four amputees. Their lives are abruptly transformed before they even learn to dream freely. Women account for 12.5%, many having lost limbs while trying to protect their families or flee bombardments.
Every day, we suffer much because we don't have sufficient supportive equipment or prosthetics. Moving from one place to another is a struggle because roads are battered and damaged in the war, and the transportations are difficult.
I used to borrow the walking stick from my neighbor. At first, I got shrapnel from an Israeli attack that caused my amputation. And 1 year after the amputation, I am still getting rehabilitation with difficulty, as the cases are a lot and the center is overwhelmed.
Behind each number is a story of terror survived. Yet survival, doctors warn, is only the beginning. Gaza's shattered health system offers little for those who must now learn to live differently. Rehabilitation centers lie in ruins, prosthetics labs lack the most basic materials, and patients often leave operating rooms to a reality without therapy, mobility aids, or even adequate pain relief.
For Gaza's amputees, the struggle now is not only for survival, but for dignity, mobility, and the ability of rebuilding hope in a place where so much has been reduced to rubble. Ibrahim for Deir al-Balah City, Palestine.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is for a better life. For a better life.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Peace and blessings to you, dear listeners. Welcome again to For a Better Life on IRIB English Radio. This is Nahid, having the honor of hosting you on this episode. This is For a Better Life, a place where faith and poetry meet, and where we listen not only with our ears, but with our hearts. Today, we explore one of the deepest questions in human life, the journey of the soul. Where do we come from? Why are we here? And how can we move closer to who we were truly created to be? Let us begin, as always, with the gentle wisdom of Sadi Shirazi, the Persian prose writer and poet. In his book of Bustan, he says, "The body is dust and clay, but a soul is a traveler from the heavens. Whoever knows his origin will not be lost upon the road." The Holy Book of Quran tells us that when Allah created Adam, he shaped him from clay and then breathed into him his spirit. That divine breath, Nafs al-Rahman, is within every one of us. It is the whisper of our true origin, the part of us that never truly belongs to this world. Sadi wrote, "You are not the dust you walk upon. You are the light that walks within it." So every soul begins its journey as a spark of divine origin, descending into this world to learn, to struggle, to love, and to return purified. Now, this world is not our destination. It's our classroom. Here we are tested and shaped by experiences. Every success, every sorrow, every loss is part of our divine curriculum. Imam Ali alayhi salam had said, "The world is a place of passage, not of permanence. Take from it provisions for your journey." And Sadi explained this truth in a poetic way. "The mirror of the heart shines only when polished by the dust of trial. Pain, therefore, is not punishment, It is purification. It teaches us what pride could have never taught. Every soul carries both light and shadow. The nafs, or the lower self, constantly pulls us towards comfort and ego. But within us also lies the whisper of truth, the divine voice of conscience. The Holy Book of Quran calls the untrained soul a nafs al-amara, the soul that commands to evil. And Imam Sadiq alayhi salam had said, your greatest enemy is the one who lives within your chest, your own self. Sa'di wrote, the wild horse of desire cannot be killed, but it can be tamed by the hand of reason. To rise spiritually is not to deny our desires, but to govern them, to make the heart the master, not the slave. Now let's go for a short break, and then we'll be back by the rest of this thoughtful episode of For a Better Life.
ارتباطتون رو با خدا قوی کنید. در مسائل دینی به نقاط عقلانی و ظریف.
Improve your connection with God. Pay attention to logical and detailed points in religious issues and learn them from great masters. There are sentiments in religion, but they rely on deep ideality and deep thought. This thought must be learned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Welcome back, and we're talking about our true origin. Well, Islamic mystics describe three main stages in the soul's growth. The first one is the commanding self, ruled by passion and pride. The other one is the blaming self, awakened by guilt and self-awareness. And the other one is the peaceful self, content in the remembrance of Allah. And then comes the divine call, O tranquil soul, return to your Lord, pleased and pleasing. Sa'di reflected on this truth. The one who knows his destination walks calmly. It is the lost who hurry within direction. The closer we come to peace with Allah, the less the storms of life can shake us. Now, the soul's journey is not solitary. Our companions influence the direction of our hearts as well. Our Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam had said, a person follows the faith of his companions, so let each of you see whom he befriends. Sa'di wrote, a rose placed among thorns still gives fragrance, but a thorn among roses gains none. Surround yourself with those who remind you of goodness, those who pull you toward patience, prayer, and purpose. The wrong company can make even faith fade, but the right one can make it bloom. Now, when hardship comes, we often ask, why me? But the mature soul asks instead, what is God teaching me here? And Imam Ali alayhi salam had said, adversity is a gift that reveals the believer's patience. And Sa'di echoed, the pearl is born in pain. The oyster weeps before it shines. Our trials are not random. They are milestones on the path of refinement. Without them, the soul would remain untested, unshaped, like raw gold before the fire. At the heart of spiritual maturity lies prayer, the remembrance of Allah. Our Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam had said, the polish of the heart is the remembrance of Allah. And Sa'di beautifully continues, the tongue that remembers the beloved, even in silence, sings louder than all the music of the world. Remembrance doesn't always mean words, sometimes it means awareness. To remember that God sees you, as to see your life differently, to speak gently, to act honestly, and to love sincerely. As life moves forward, the soul begins to sense its longing for its true home. Death for the awakened soul is not a tragedy. It's a kind of homecoming. Imam Ali alayhi salam had said, people are asleep. When they die, they awaken. And Sadi describes it with grace. The night of separation ends with dawn, and the traveler returns to the garden from which he came. So if we live with awareness, we will meet death with peace, not with fear. For the soul only leaves the body, and it never leaves God. So how do we live as a conscious traveler every day? Well, we can begin every morning with intention, not routine. We can let humility guard our success and patience guard our pain. We can choose prayer over panic and gratitude over complaint. We can remember that no good deed is going to be lost. And for sure, we're going to see the outcome and the result of all our efforts. Now, dear listeners, this journey of the soul is not measured in distance or years, but in awareness. In how much we remember who we truly are. Sadi writes in his book of Bustan, O Lord, do not let me stray from the path, nor let me boast of my own walking. The traveler reaches not by his feet, but by your grace that carries him. So tonight, before closing our eyes, we reflect not on what we have earned, but on what we have learned. Think not of what you have built, but of what you have become. The world will pass. Material wealth, social praise, and fleeting comforts will fade. What remains, what travels with you beyond this life, is the purity of your soul, your closeness to God, and the sincerity of our intention. So, how do we nurture this journey every day? How are we continuing this life? Even small steps might matter, like beginning each day with the intention that, oh God, guide my soul today. Choosing patience over anger, humility over pride. Offering one act of kindness without expecting recognition, or reflecting on mistakes, not to punish ourselves, but to learn and grow. Ending each day in prayer, remembering God's mercy and guidance. Even the smallest mindful action can illuminate the path, and every lapse offers a chance for return. Sadi reminded us, every step of the traveler counts, even those taken in tears. Our journey is a lifelong process, falling, rising, remembering, and returning. The ultimate stage of the soul's journey is returning home, not in fear, but in peace. The Holy Book of Quran says, O tranquil soul, return to your Lord, well-pleased and pleasing. Death is not an ending for the believer, it is a reunion, a final arrival to the garden from which the soul originated. Now, dear friends, life is a journey, short in years, but eternal in impact. Each breath is an opportunity to move closer to our origin, which is the light of our God that created us. May your steps be mindful and your hearts gentle, and your soul ever journeying towards its creator. Now, with all these great wishes, we end today's episode and wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be I'm a traveler, just as they were,
walking
the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast,
waiting
to return. Oh, 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 oh.
just to know you, whoever you are. Laugh with you, learn from you, open to you my heart. But soon when I say goodbye and move on, I'm a traveler, just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return. While I'm here, I will always try to be.
While I'm here, I will always try to be.
The kind of neighbor who prays for you and me.
The kind of neighbor who prays for you and me.
There for you, a shoulder to turn to. I'm a traveler, just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return, waiting to return. To know you, I've learned so much.
Been a pleasure to know you, I've learned so much.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Remember me, so I might be with you. I'm a traveler, just as they were,
walking
the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast,
waiting
to return, waiting to return, waiting to return, return to my
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
a Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إنا أعطيناك الكوثر فصل لربك وانحر إن شانئك هو الأبتر. السلام عليكم dear ladies from all around the world. Welcome to a new episode of Muslim Lady. Well, today's episode is all a celebration on the auspicious occasion of the blissful birthday of the world's most outstanding lady, فاطمة الزهراء سلام الله عليها.
فاطمة مولاتي فاطمة فاطمة مولاتي فاطمة فاطمة مولاتي فاطمة فاطمة مولاتي فاطمة فاطمة مولاتي فاطمة.
And this very happy occasion of the birthday of Lady Fatima Salamullah Alayha, I welcome you to a new episode of Muslim Lady. Salam alaikum, Sister Zainab.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I also extend my congratulations to you on this very auspicious occasion of birthday of Lady Zahra Salamullah Alayha, which is also the
Women's Day.
Yes.
Women's and it's Day, Eid, of course. Day.
Yes, of course. It's for all women.
To all women out there, to all the Muslim ladies especially. And if we want to be the followers of this great lady, of this great outstanding lady, then we have to follow her lifestyle. As we have been doing that for weeks, we are focusing on the way she lived, on the narrations that actually has been passed to us through different books and different scholars. Now we know more about her. So if we want to achieve salvation according to her, if we want to be among her followers, we have to be more careful about how we act. And we have to know her more and more in order to get closer to how she was. So, since we want to know more about her, Sister Zainab is here to tell us about the sources that are going to make it more clear for us to get closer to know her.
As you rightly mentioned that we got to know her more and more. The more we know her and the more we get closer to her, the more we can follow her. So there are many sources you can get to know about Lady Zahra Sallam Alayha, but I would refer to a very few in this episode. The first source is obviously the Holy Book of Quran. We already mentioned that she is introduced in Surah Kawthar, and then there are many other surahs where she is mentioned. Like there's this verse of Tathir, or also called as verse of purification. It's the verse 33 of Surah Ahzab, which reads, "Indeed, Allah desires to repel all impurity from only you, Ahlul Bayt, and purify you with thorough purification." It talks about the purification of Ahlul Bayt, and the Shia school of thought also uses this verse as a source to defend the infallibility. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala introduces Ahlul Bayt in this verse and talks about their purification. Now, is there any verse that talks about how Fatima Zahra salam alayha is Ahlul Bayt? Yes, there is also the verse of Mubahila, which is from the verse 61 of chapter 3. And there was this encounter of Prophet, peace be upon him, with the Christians of Najran, and then they called the elders, and Prophet also called his Ahlul Bayt, making it clear who were Ahlul Bayt.
Yeah, thank you, sister. So, dear listeners, thank you for being with us. Let's go for a short break, and we'll be back in no time.
In the name of Allah, the All-Beneficent, the All-Merciful, indeed we have given you abundance.
Welcome back. You're listening to Muslim Lady. Well, dear Muslim ladies, we're talking about Lady Fatima Salamullah Alayha, and Sister Zainab was telling us about the purification verse in the Holy Book of Quran. And let's listen to more.
The verse of purification, which is also called as Ayat Tathir, or which is the verse 33 of Surah Ahzab, introduces Ahlul Bayt as pure. And then there's this verse number 61 of chapter 3, which introduces who are Ahlul Bayt. Like Allah, Prophet introduces, or Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala introduces Imam Ali as Anfusana, the soul of Prophet. And he introduces Hasnan, the Imam Hasan and Imam Hussein al-Islam, as Abna, the sons of Prophet. And Lady Zahra salam alayha as Nisa'ana, the women. There were many more people in the household of Prophet, Uncle Abbas, their sons, and so many other people, but he brought these chosen people and he called them as Ahlul Bayt. And you know, there was a verse coming in, the verse of verse 61 of chapter 3, introducing them, who they are. So it's very clear who are Ahlul Bayt. Then there's a verse about their infallibility. And also, there's one more verse which talks about her character, the way she behaved. Like, there's a saying that she once was, her sons were very ill, and then she keeps fast, and then at the time of when she prepares iftar, some of the breads, then some of the three times the door gets struck, and there are people asking for food, and she gives away all three times, and then she breaks her fast with a glass of water. And then also a verse of Surah Al-Adha or Surah Insan gets revealed, which says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, they are those who fulfill their vows and fear a day of sweeping horror and give food despite their desire for it to the poor, to the orphan, and to the captive. Talking about Quran, it talks all about her qualities. Talking about Prophet Muhammad is another source. His words are another source we can refer to her, who used to, you know, kiss her hand, stand for her in her honor, respect her. And, you know, in the days of ignorance, when everywhere was so, so ignorant, he would stand up in her honor and he would kiss her hands. And he would often, quite often, tell her that may your dad get sacrificed for you.
Yeah, teaching other men of his time, how is it to respect a woman?
Exactly. And on this, we would have no Women's Day if Prophet never did that.
Exactly. So we have how kind he has been to his daughter.
Exactly. So if we are receiving gifts today, if we're getting honor today, it's all because of his respect he showed towards his daughter.
Yeah.
And then also, obviously, Imam Ali alayhi salam, how he used to refer to her. She also called him as Ya Sayyidina. He also referred to her as Ya Sayyidina, which means my leader.
Mm-hmm.
So do you see, even today, men have that kind of, you know, ego. They can't call their wives as leader.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Imam Ali alayhi salam calls her as Ya Sayyidina. You know, you are my leader.
So this is the beauty of our religion, actually, that even our Prophet is such a respectful man toward women, even his daughter, his wives, and all the women around him.
Yes.
So all these things have been passed down to us through the narrations. There's also another narration that says, Fatima is a part of me and the light of my eyes and the fruit of my heart, my soul. And this makes it pretty much clear.
You made it all like, how from Prophet's words we can know about her.
Yeah.
What were his thoughts about her? Because in many places he also says that those who make her happy make Allah happy. Those who make her angry make Allah angry.
Yeah.
So this again shows the status of this pious lady.
And once more, I have to congratulate all of you, all the Muslim ladies out there in this happy occasion. Let's go for a short break and we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, dear ladies. You're listening to your program in today's episode, which is a happy episode because we're talking about this auspicious occasion, which is the birth anniversary of Lady Fatima Salamullah Alayha. And Sister Zainab is actually helping us with that.
Yes, sister. So we were talking about the sources we can refer to know more about the lady. So we talked about Quran. We said some of the verses, like Surah Qasr is there, Ayah Mubahila is there, the verse of Mubahila, the verse of Tathir, or the verse of purification, or also the verse of Surah Insan, which we can refer to know more about the lady. Then we said words of the Prophet, and you put it all in one of the hadiths that he calls her, that you are a part of me, you are a fruit of my soul, you are the one who makes you happy, makes Allah happy, the one who angers you, makes Allah angry. There are other imams as well, like Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says, he writes in a letter to Muawiyah that there are certain things that are a matter of pride for me to, that Fatima is among us. And also Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says the same thing, that it's a matter of pride for us that Fatima salam alayhi is from us. Imam Baghir alayhi salam calls her Siddiqah al-Kubra because, in Quran, Lady Maryam, who has a very, very high status, is called as Siddiqah, but Imam Baghir al-Islam calls Lady Fatima al-Zahra Siddiqatun Qubra. In the same way, like all imams have said something about her, and also the imam of our time, Imam Zamaj Allah Ta'ala Faraj, says that she is my role model.
Which clarifies everything.
Yes, like she can't be a role model for only Muslim ladies,
yeah.
But also the Muslim men out there. She's role model for all, like because she practiced patience in her life and so many other things. And patience or these other attributes are not something that only women have to practice in their life. Even males can learn a hell lot of things from her life.
Yeah. So, sister, even Allah himself is giving so much of importance to this one lady. Among all these men, he is making this woman so much of importance. And this is so much of messages to give everyone.
Apart from, like, Quran, apart from Prophet, the words of Prophet, peace be upon him, apart from Imams, these are the three major sources. Apart from them, there are writers. They are Muslim writers. They are Shia writers. They are non-Shia writers. They are Sunni writers. They have so many books about ladies, and even there are non-Muslim writers.
Yeah, exactly.
One of them is like Sulaiman Qattani, who has written a book about Fatima al-Zahra, peace be upon her, tendon in Shilf. And there are so many other, it's not just one non-Muslim scholar. There are so many scholars who have researched upon her life and written big books about her. So her life is not only a symbol and a role model for Muslims, but also for non-Muslims. And her life in itself is a lesson. She as a daughter was daughter with all her existence. She wept for her father. She acted as a nurse for her father when he would come from the wars. She condoled her father. She was daughter in all senses. She took care of her father in a sense that she got a title, Umme Abiha,
yeah.
The mother of her father. She was a wife, a loving wife, a caring wife, expressed love. She never compared her husband. She respected him a lot. She was a mother in all senses. She would play with her kids. She would sing for them. She would recite poems for them, and she would upbring them, and she would definitely take care of their spirituality. And talking about her importance, talking about her attributes, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi, which is also his birthday today with her, and see the coincidence. With the blessing of her birthday, with the blessing of coming on the same day, he became the leader of the revolution of Islamic
exactly.
Republic of Iran. He also says that, I am amazed about her virtues. The most one that struck me or makes me ponder is the one that Jibreel, after Prophet Muhammad, when the revolution was cut, everything was over, in those 75 days when she is alive, he comes continuously to her and gives her condolences, gives her messages from Prophet, peace be upon him. So yeah, there are a lot of things we could know more about
the
lady.
Of course, she's the mother of all the women. She's the queen of all the ladies of heaven. So there's a lot to her to talk about. If a Muslim lady wants to know more about her, everything is available for her, and she could go for search and search and know more about her and apply it in her life. And that's all. So once more, sister, and all the listeners, I congratulate all of you in this happy occasion. May it be all blessings for you. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you and shower you with His blessings. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Good morning to you all. Greetings from Tehran, Iran. You are listening to Iran Radio. I'm your presenter for the next hour. We start this hour's lineup with Let's Recite the Holy Quran. The program teaches eloquent recitation of the Holy Quran at level 2. That will be followed by our varied radio productions feature. Then it's time for our final program, this hour, Viewpoints. The program presents an analytical roundtable discussion of various political and social issues of the Islamic world today. Stay with us for the next hour.
Let's recite the Quran.
وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا
الْقُرْآنَ نُورٌ وَبَيَانٌ الْقُرْآنَ هَدْيُ الْإِيمَانِ الْقُرْآنَ مِسْكُ الْخِتَامِ
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Welcome to this edition of Let's Recite the Quran. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. My name is Muhammad, and with me today in the studio, the usual brothers, Brother Ali, Hassan, Hussein, and Masoom. Welcome to you all, brothers, and welcome to this program, dear listeners. In this episode, we will be reciting Surah Nuh, continuing the recitation of Surah Nuh, and this will be the last episode for that chapter because we are in the last four verses of that chapter, verses number 25, 26, 27, and 28 of chapter 71 of the Noble Quran, and this chapter only has 28 verses. I'll ask Brother Ali, without any further ado, to please take the honor of reciting verse number 25 of Surah Nuh. Brother Ali, Bismillah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم مما خطيئاتهم أغرقوا فأدخلوا نارا فلم يجدوا لهم من دون الله أنصارا
أنصارا.
Yes.
First of all, there is a ghunna because yeah. There is ikhfa here. And then the Sa and Ra are both of them
Tafkhim
in this case. Ansara. All right, let's begin. Let's go from the beginning of the verse. Mimma. The first meme, because you're beginning with it, even if there is Shadda, there is no form of Ghunna involved. But the second meme, because it's in the middle of the recitation and it's Shadda, you have to give it a Ghunna. Ghunna basically means a nasal sound and two counts of stretch. Keep in mind, ghunna yes. is equal to nasal sound plus two counts of stretch. Mimma khati'atihim kha and ta, both of them are tafkhim, that is. Khati, right? Now, this stretch, this med, Brother Ali, tell me, what kind of a med is this?
This one is wajib.
Wajib, and because it's muttasil, it's you have to go for how many counts?
Six
beats, okay?
Yes.
Khati'atihim, right? Ughriqu ghain and qa, both of them are tafkhim, that is. Ughriqu fa'udkhilu, udkhilu, what ruling is applied in the dal of this udkhilu?
We have qalqala.
Qalqala. Qalqala basically means that whenever we have qutub jad letters, qaf, ta, ba, jim, and dal, and they're sakin, we give an echoing sound because these letters have a very similar sound when they are sakin. To differentiate between these letters, we give an echoing sound. Originally, it would have been fa'udkhilu, right? But after the application of qalqala, it becomes fa'udkhilu, udkhilu, right? The kha again is a tafkhim, that are udkhilu, right? Nara, not nara. It's a very, because again, tafkhim and tarqiq, when you're practicing and you're trying to focus, it becomes confusing in many cases. Nara, the first